Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, annuities, perpetuities, and other applications of time value of money. You will have, again, a surprise quiz on Wednesday of next week, and a lot of it will be this, and a little further point to make is that I will, for quiz and exam purposes, I will make a, sort of a standard format for each kind of problem. So a loan problem would look very much like an example I would give you in the classroom. It wouldn't deviate, wouldn't get fancy, and I'll stick to a way of structuring the wording so that you should be able to see, okay, I use this formula, this spreadsheet, this worksheet in the present and future values section. Now I have added one thing to the that file, present and future value. So you'll want to upload it again. It's a little extra piece that will help you enormously with a kind of a tedious little problem that shows up in finance, finding how long it takes for a certain amount of money to become a larger amount of money. That involves the use of logarithms and some fancy footwork, and I've created a little extra piece, and I'll show it to you here in a while. So be sure that you upload again, and I'll show you how to upload it. Make sure that you have that one. And as I had told you before, I'm always trying to make these so that they are more visually easy, not so much easy, but more evident what you do for different kinds of problems in these sections that are more quantitative. But again, this will be the spreadsheet that will be you'll need for the quiz next week. Master it, and you'll have not much problem at all with the numerical questions on that quiz and on the midterm exam. But first, a look at the numbers, and the numbers are just about somewhere around disappointing. The funniest thing right now is that the Dow, which is usually the least spectacular because it's just big, giant, viscous companies that don't move very fast on anything, they are the ones that are doing the best. And that's not just today. It's been a kind of a pattern over the past couple of weeks, at least. The Dow is up a decent, a little more than a half a percent. That's not spectacular, but it's a decent day up. Now, the S&P 500 is just barely down. There's nothing that's really moving it around. And as you can see, it's been, on the Spark chart here, it's been pretty quiet. It got a little bit exciting. It did a decent drop about an hour ago, and then it recovered and bounced right back up to where it had been. Now, the NASDAQ did the same thing. It's down a little more at negative 0.16%, but these are not spectacular numbers at all. To the best of what I can hear from the people, my former students and others on the street, it's more or less, it's a wait-and-see kind of attitude. They want to be very bullish. There is this fundamental desire. We have a very, almost an extremely pro-business presidency and Congress. And that should, everything they're saying is what business wants to hear. And yet the data is telling them this isn't going to work. And so you have these two polar opposite directions. And so everyone is kind of sitting in the middle saying, okay, let's just wait to see what is coming, get a little bit clearer picture about where we're going from here. And getting reliable data right now is really hard, but there are some private services that are providing objective information, which is not what we're seeing from the official channels right now. But they're saying it's really troubling. But you also have the other side saying it'll all work out. By this time next year, we're going to have an incredible economy. Unbelievable. We'll see. But going over on the other side of the world here, I did find out, I was curious, this thing, Japanese, over here, just showed up. And I thought, well, is this some kind of an index on the Tokyo Exchange? Actually, no, it's not. This is a currency index. I gather a currency index of different currencies against the Japanese currency, the yen. So it's really not something that I was thinking, well, this has got to be some kind of an exchange or an index number. It's not. It's just currencies. But I did want to clarify my lack of knowledge of it from the last class on Monday. Nikkei 225, just again, there's almost like there's nothing much going on. It started down, it rose, and then it went down. Nothing big. It's just kind of floating. Now, the Hang Seng was different. The Chinese exchange, Hong Kong, has had a couple of bullish sessions, very bullish, and there are reasons for that, geoeconomically geopolitically. They are consolidating a lot of business relationships that we just walked away from them. And so the Chinese are flowing in, especially South America. They are establishing special trading deals with countries down in that part of the world that we are just cutting off now with our trade policies. They also, as I had mentioned in the last class, they have established a $1 billion pipeline to move natural gas from Siberia down to China, which loves that. And then that gives much more power to China and to Russia, because Europe depends upon gas from the east, natural gas from the east, to heat their homes in the winter. And so that gives the Russians and the Chinese more political leverage over Western European countries. So there you are. So China has got other deals that are working out now. They're just plowing in wherever we aren't. They're showing up. And used to be we did a branding kind of thing. We would move aid through Africa, big trucks with American flags on them, delivering aid. And now you don't see those. You're seeing trucks coming along with food and all those things that have Chinese flags on them. So it's changing. The world is changing. And so I am bullish on China right now, not politically certainly, but as far as economic investment opportunities and all that are concerned, absolutely. Coming over here to Western Europe, you can look at Euro, the European stocks. I wish they were putting, did they stop putting Euronext on here? They sure, I guess this one will do. This, as you can see, this is another European index, index of European stock performances. And as you can see, it was also pretty lackluster today as well. Sort of a malaise around the world, except for China, which is enjoying itself. And if you look at the FTSE, London's, it actually had a good rise, but by the end, it's tailing back off again, so that it may end up on a positive note, but it's not going to be anything spectacular. Right now, a little before trading ends in London, it's up only 0.14%. Again, everyone's sort of sitting around waiting to see what happens next. It's interesting that the CAC, which is 40 big, big companies on the Paris exchange, or the Paris bourse, as we would say, they're not doing so well today, which is contrary to the Dow 30 big American companies. They're kind of in a little bit better mood right now. coming down here, gold had a drop off, but also interestingly enough, notice crude oil is going down, which is what I said is going to keep being the case. Oil is going to be low price, and that will eventually translate into lower gas prices. And I honestly don't know why they haven't come down yet. They should be, with this kind of price per barrel of oil, you should be in the upper $2 range, $2.99, $2.89 a gallon for gasoline. And it's just not there. They're managing to hold the price of retail gasoline up, which of course is very profitable for the giant oil companies because they're getting the wholesale stuff, the raw material, at a really good price. And yet they are not passing that along to consumers hardly at all. But you know, that may change. Eventually competition among them may push the price of gasoline down, but who knows when. But anyway, this is where we are right now as far as the world scene is concerned, and it's driving me crazy. Oh, the 10-year bond is our benchmark bond. It's sort of a measure of interest rates overall in the economy. And we'll talk about yields and all that kind of stuff. Actually, chapter 6 or chapter 7 is where we do bonds and bond yields and all that. But you take this as sort of a pulse of where interest rates in general are going in the economy. And the 10-year is like the benchmark. We kind of keep an eye on that. Whither it goes, that's where interest rates are going. And right now, it has actually gone down a lot over the last couple of weeks because there's expectations that the Fed is going to cut interest rates, even though they don't want to. The political pressure on them is staggering right now to push down interest rates, which will, of course, create inflation down the road, but that's not today. You notice that the bond yield is just above 4% right now. What that will eventually do is you'll start to see home mortgage loan rates going down and auto loan rates going down. They have been stubbornly high for some time. And this, if those interest rates go down, that should stimulate purchases of homes, that should stimulate purchases of cars. However, with the tariffs in place, cars are getting awfully expensive. So even a lower interest rate on a car loan may not be enough to induce people to eat those higher prices on cars, especially foreign cars, which are very popular in the United States. And a lot of consumers don't consider a domestic car as a close substitute for a foreign-made, let's say, Subaru or Toyota or one of those kinds of cars. So even though these interest rates should stimulate borrowing, buying, and stuff like that, the fact that prices of those things that we are going to borrow money for are going down may not help with the help stimulate demand. We'll see, though. Stay tuned for this. Let me show you something here. I had brought up a company on Monday, mRNA, Moderna. They are a vaccine-making company. That's pretty much their only business. And they took a major hit when the government announced that it was no longer going to provide subsidies to develop new vaccines. The company just took a major hit because that's what they do, is make those vaccines, and they rely on government support to make that happen. So, however, they made a couple of announcements today about where they're going. And as you can see, they're mapping out a road plan for being able to live, to still develop vaccines in an economic environment where there is no support from the government. And that was favorably taken by the market. They were up more than 0.5% today. Actually, they're really climbing right now. So you see the power of information to push. Their stock price had been going down because the information was adverse to them. However, now that they have stepped forward and said, here's what we're going to do, the market saw that as a positive sign, and so the bulls came in and they're buying up the stock again now. And that's why you always keep your eye on information that is fresh and new, because that is what's going to tell you the direction that the stock price is going to go from where it is now. If they're saying, well, we're screwed, well, the stock price would have dropped. But instead, they came forward and they gave a believable, realistic plan to keep moving forward with new vaccines. And so their price improved. I'm curious. Pfizer, as I said, is also in that business, but they're a more diversified company. So we'll see. Now they're showing signs of improvement too. Because if Moderna sees a way to keep making vaccines, then the other competitors are going to say, this is our challenge, we'll do it too. So the markets are bullish on these vaccine-producing companies because they are giving out positive information that is believable to the markets.
Excuse me.
I want to show you a company that is highly controversial. Traders, okay, if you are an investor, generally speaking, you look to the long term. You don't go crazy, buy, sell, buy, sell. However, the traders, the speculators, do move on a moment's notice. Buy right now, sell in an hour, that kind of stuff. So in an environment like that, you have a company called Palantir. It is highly controversial, which means it is risky. Controversy creates risk. Palantir is collecting data on everyone, and they are selling that data. They are providing it to the government and all kinds of things that make it highly controversial. However, that can also be opportunity. But notice that the market is not seeing it that way. The Palantir is being punished by the market, not on the moral ground that that they're spying on all of us. They're turning us all into profit centers with our behaviors, our preferences, and all that. It's more to do with what the consequences of that kind of an operation are. And in this case, you're seeing, at least for today, the market is quite bearish because this company is beginning to get known for what it's up to, and the news about it is negative. And so that negative news is taking this stock, Palantir, down a few notches. Now let me show you if I can take this out, let me take you out a year. Notice that Palantir, the idea of collecting data on people and selling that data is a business model, and it is a profitable business model. So overall, even though it does sound repugnant what they are doing, it is a favorable stock. Even though it's taken some negative PR in the last few weeks, because now it's being told, everybody, this is what this company does. That's bad PR. However, the underlying of what they're doing is positive. That's why you see this stock price going up. Overall, it is favorably seen by the street because the street does not have a moral sense to it. All it does is say, is this going to make money for the shareholders or is it going to hurt shareholder value? In the case of this company, what they're doing, whatever, however nasty it is, it makes money. And so the company is profitable. So the company's stock, in the minds of traders, is going to go up. The sell-off is because of very recent bad PR about it, but overall, the market is still bullish on this stock. And that's how you have to think about it. I'm just curious here. Let me look at there. Geez, Zoe, look at that beta on that stock. That's 2.59. That is a very high beta. That's definitely not an amateur stock. This is the playground of the high risk takers. This is the casino players are the ones who take on Palantir. And I have actually done derivatives, invested in derivatives on Palantir and came out making some money. And that was not an ethical choice and not a moral choice. It was a profit-centered choice. It's a risky company. Derivatives can either lose you a lot of money or make you a lot of money when you invest in them. And especially when they have high betas like this, you can make a lot very quickly, or you can lose a lot very quickly with a stock like this. Now, if you go down here, you can see that they are profitable, but not that profitable. 31 cents per share is their EPS. So it is profitable, but look at that insane PE ratio. What that's telling us is that this stock is ridiculously overvalued, in the same way that Tesla, with its insanely high PE ratio, it's overvalued. How long will it take for the company to go back down to intrinsic value or below it? No one knows. Could be a year, could be 2 years. You just don't know with these kinds of companies. You know that they're overvalued. So on a long-term basis, these are bad investments because sooner or later, you'll lose your shirt. For short-term plays, yeah, if you're crazy enough to do betas like that, and it doesn't pay a dividend, so there you are. Notice that Yahoo Finance, and I'm going to do this one just so that we have another example for you for holding period return. And I'm going to show you another kind of holding period return today. But let me get the calculator out. There it is. Okay, and I'm doing this. I do this over and over again just so it bakes into you how you do this. You take the price projected in 1 year, which is that number down there, divided by the current price, which is this number right up here, and then you subtract one equals, and then you add the dividend yield. In this case, we don't have to worry about dividend yield because this company doesn't pay a dividend. That's one of the reasons it's so darned risky. So I'm going to take the ending value. In 1 year, if you sell the stock that you bought today, in 1 year, Yahoo Finance is projecting that you will sell it for $151.74. Divided by, now you look at what you're paying today to take out $151.74. You would divide it by $169.19. Then you subtract one, and then you say equals, and then you times it by 100 after you've hit equals just to turn it into a percent. So in other words, the stock is projected, and you would add a dividend yield to this, but there is no dividend, so you don't have to worry about this. So a one-year holding period return on Palantir is negative 10.31%. That's Yahoo Finance's analyst's projection. You're going to lose money on Palantir. So what they're kind of saying here is that over the next year, Palantir is going to move more toward its intrinsic value. In other words, the PE ratio, price to earnings, price will be going down, so it'll be moving more toward its intrinsic value. That's why this is probably for a year, which is long enough for punishment to start to take hold in some cases. This is a really no-no value. Your own eyes are seeing high risk, 2.59 beta. You're seeing that you're not going to get a dividend, so you're just going to make money if the stock price goes up. That's another risk factor. And also you're seeing that the price earnings ratio is indicating ridiculous overvaluation. Overvalue. Those three together and this projection by a fairly decent forecasting service, Yahoo Finance, is telling you you're going to lose money. That's four reasons to stay TF away from Palantir. And then you don't have to worry about some ethical, moral decision. Should I invest in a company that does this? It doesn't matter. It's not going to make you money. So let's keep our righteousness off on in the corner. It's just not going to make money. So screw them. We're not going to do this investment. That's the sort of the big take on this. Anyway, let me take you over here. Oh, by the way, why don't you do your attendance radar right now? And once you've got that done, I want you to go over to Files in Canvas. And again, even if you already have download it again, because I've baked another little formula into it. And I'll show it to you real quick here. Go Files, Canvas, Files, and go down to Finder Spreadsheets. And in your Spreadsheets folder, download your present and future values. Now, remember to download, you use the three dots on the right side. Click it, download. Once it tries to download, it may fuss at you. Do you want to replace the one you've already got? Yes, you want to replace it. Overwrite it if you can. Now, I'll show you here. Where I put in a new little formula is in annuities. Did I put it in annuities? Where the heck did I put it? No, I put it in here. Well, I'm not going to, it's apparently Canvas didn't like that. I put it in there and it didn't upload it. Good, it didn't save it correctly. Let me check over here in Canvas again. March 4th. Wait, did I put it up one level? The one that I just put in here is one where suppose that you have a certain amount of money. You know the interest rate, the compounding, how many compoundings per year and all of that. And you wanted to know how long it would take for that to grow to another amount of money. So you would see a problem like, how long would it take to double $5,000? In an account with an APR of, oh, let's say 5.09% compounded quarterly. You don't have to know what I'm going to show you here, but this is how that machine works in that little formula. You're saying, remember, future value is present value times 1 plus R over 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. And that means that in this case, you have $10,000 is the future value of $5,000 times 1 plus 0.059 over 4 to the 4 times the number of years, n. That's what you're writing. And if you remember something from your dark days in algebra, solving for an exponent is the complicated thing to do in a quick algebra, in an algebra course. You have to use logarithms to do this. So what you actually are doing is you're taking, first thing you do is you peel off the 5,000, divide both sides by 5,000, so that you have 10,000 over 5,000 is 0.0509 over 4 to the 4 times n. That's the first thing algebraically you would do. Now, in order to get that exponent into something that is usable, workable, now 10,000 over 5,000 is 2. Notice that's the double. If I said triple, that would be a 3 there. And then you're going to say, and I'll write the rest of it right here, just so you have step by step to see how it works inside the 4 times n. Now, in order to get that exponent exposed, I'm going to take the log of both sides. The natural log of 2 is the natural log of 1 plus 0.059 over 4 to the 4 times n. And again, I'm not going to hold you to this. I'm just showing you how this machine works inside. Now, if you remember logarithms, an exponent inside a logarithm, you can bring out as a multiplication. You can actually just put it outside of the logarithm. That was kind of the big thing when logarithms were first invented. And yes, they were invented some centuries ago. As a backstory, the fellow who invented logarithms back in the late 1600s, I think it was, he didn't think this was very important. He went crazy in his old age and said, never mind logarithms. He thought that the end of the world was coming, and he obsessed with it. And so he never understood just how incredible what he had done was. Now, this is just a number. 4 is just a number, so I can divide it off. This is just a number. The log of 1 plus 0.0509 over 4 is just a number. It's a crazy, irrational number, but it's just a number. So I can just divide off and say the log of 2 over the natural log of 4 times the log of 1 plus 0.0509 over 4. That equals n. I've solved for the number of years it takes to do it. Now, the formula in its general form, I will write that down. You might want to write it in your notes. It's not terribly important that you remember it, but you can always find the number of years by taking the natural log of the future value over the present value, PV, and divide that by the compoundings per year times the natural log of 1 plus the APR over the number of compoundings per year. That is the formula. That is the formula in this little table here. You don't have to do anything but put in the case of ours, yeah, we start with $5,000 and we want to grow that to $10,000 at an APR of 5.09%, compounded, yeah, quarterly, so that'd be a 4. It'll take 13.7 years. That's all you have to do. You don't have to do the logarithms. That's already done for you. As you can see right here, see the ln and the ln? I've already done that. That's what the formula does. It does that formula. It takes the future value, in this case 10,000, divided by the present value, 5,000, compounding quarterly, an APR of 5.09%, and you get your answer. That's all there is to it. Just so that you know that if I can ask that on a quiz, It is all it is an Excel routine in your spreadsheet. So I could say, okay, you're going to put in $4,000 and you want to triple that money. So that would be $12,000. And you got an APR of, let's say, 3.69% compounded semi-annually. There's your result. And remember, when you see those pound signs, just double click. Oh, I did that backwards. Future value is 12,000. I was wondering why I got a negative number, 4,000. And you don't have to do triple or quadruple. Wait. 12,000, I wanted to triple? Let's take 12,000 and triple it, $36,000. 93 years, yeah, okay. It's gonna take a long time to get that. Oh, I put 360. 36,000, okay, 30 years. Now, if that comes up with a negative, don't worry about it. But there's how you do it. So don't make this a difficult thing. Just remember, if it comes out a negative, just put the positive of the number. But there's your result right there. Lump sums, in general, are really straightforward. The way you can tell that it is a lump sum is I talk about a specific amount of money. That is, if you have a certain amount of money once in the future and you want to know what it's worth now, that would be the present value of a lump sum. Or you have a certain amount of money now and you want to know what that amount of money is at some time down the road. That would be the future value of a lump sum. So that's where we start, is with that a problem like that on a quiz, on your midterm exam. All you have to know is how to put the numbers in. That's it. And that is just the modern way we do it. We don't use calculators. We don't use pens and papers to do things. Not out in the business world. It just takes too long, and we don't have enough time left in our lives to do it that old way. So we do it the Excel way. Now, annuities. Let me take this off the board, and I'm going to give you some wording, some names of things to move you along here. Okay, annuities. Annuities come in various flavors. Remember that an annuity is a flow of cash. It is a repeated. There are two kinds of annuities. Well, present and future value. Okay, no question about that. There are the level annuities and the non-level annuities. Level, same amount every time. Same amount every time. $200 every 2 weeks. 200, 200, 200. A non-level annuity is different amounts. 200 this time, 200 in 2 weeks, 320 2 weeks later, 150 2 weeks after that. It's non-level. These are the pain in the butt. And I will not have you worrying too much about those before the midterm. A lot of their non-level annuities show up more in corporate, and you'll see those later. In other words, when the dividends aren't the same every time, that's when the non-level annuities show up the most. So let me just finish this up with you with annuities. There are level annuities, and then there are non-level. There is also another kind that I don't know if they mention them in the book, but they are actually kind of important. We try to avoid them. We try to keep this from happening. But there is also one that is called a periodic annuity, a non-periodic. So a whole other category are periodic versus non-periodic. Now, this is the periodics, every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, every month, something like that. Non-periodics, well, whenever the hell they happen. They are actually somewhat unusual, but they can happen. And in some of the corporate finance courses I teach, we try to make it so that you are receiving money on a periodic basis from your buyers or whatever. But the reality is that you can't just force it to be that way. In my business, there is a component of it that has a natural periodicity. In other words, it kind of, usually I have, I get a check from Amazon, for example. They settle accounts at the end of every month. So there's that periodic. But then you have these punches of money that come in from art exhibits, from shows. And then that's sort of there. And then another 6 weeks later, I've got another show. And then 2 weeks later, I've got another show. So it has that non-periodic component to it, too. And so that makes it a little hard to do present values and future values, because then you have to put in each one individually into a cell in Excel and then take its present value, and that gets to be a lot like work. But we fortunately mostly, well, for this class, it'll be periodics. But I do want to bring those other ones up. Now there's another one that is important here too. The ordinary annuity versus the annuity due. The first thing, I'll tell you something technically. You'll see in those Excel sheets, one of the things I tell you, don't touch it, is a 0 or a 1. As a matter of fact, let me pull this up real quick here and show it to you. A 0 or a 1. You see those? See that zero there and that one there? Present values are usually ordinary annuities. Future values are usually annuity due. You don't have to worry too much about it because I've already baked it into those formulas that present values, Excel, consider it an ordinary annuity. Future values, Excel, consider it an annuity due. An ordinary annuity is one, payments at end of periods. You get a car loan. 1 month later, you make your first car payment. In other words, the annuity starts at the end of the period. Annuity due, the payments start immediately at beginning of period. Of period. This is the one that is oftentimes in financial planning. You say, well, when would you just immediately start making payments? Well, there is a time when that would happen. You, sir, are a happy young man. And you have a significant other. Let's say your significant other is a young woman. And one day she says to you those three words that change your life. I'm not talking about I love you. She says, I am pregnant. Swear to God, it happened to me. You know, look around for razor blades. Self-harm was an option. But so anyway, you decide you're going to write it out. You're going to, you know, you're going to man up, and you, you know, the child is born. Let me tell you, I've been to five, and I was exhausted after every one of those. Childbirth just wore me out. I don't know what happened with the lady, but I mean, I was just exhausted. I went right out for burgers. Okay. But you go, you leave, and you think, by golly, this kid is going to have a good life, and I'm going to make sure that that good life starts right now. I'm going to put $5,000 in the bank, and every year for 18 years, starting with this payment, I'm going to put $5,000 in the bank, and then on the kid's 17th birthday, I'll put in the last. Then it rides one period, the whole pile, and then on the kid's 18th birthday, I take it out and give it to him and say, here, go to college. Or something, you know, like that. Or start a business. That's an annuity due. Financial planning works that way. We always talk to our clients, okay, here are your goals. Here is the present value of all these goals. Now, or rather the future values of them, when you want a new car, your new home, when you want that, when you want to take vacations, we get all of their plans and we figure out what the payment pattern would be for each of them. And then we say, all right, write me a check today for this total amount, and we will make sure that all of your dreams come true on time. That's how wealth management works at the core of it. So that's an annuity due. So let's talk about yours, that would be a future value. You want to know, in 18 years, and suppose that this would pay you, actually, since you're putting one payment in a year, it would naturally have a one period per year compounding rate. And you get a CD that pays you 3.89%. And you're going to put $5,000 in there every year. 18 payments. First one, birth year 0. Last one, year 17. And then at the end of that 17th year, on the kid's 18th birthday, you would pull out a check for $131,878. That fast. And if you did that on even a financial calculator, it would take you a while. Using those tables that they still want to use in accounting, it would take you even longer for this. But notice, by the way, see this one? That is the annuity, that is the, says annuity due. So you don't have to worry about, is this, okay, and let me tell you my wording. If it's a future value annuity, I would say starting today, you put in a certain amount. But you're dead, I guarantee you, you know that you're going to use future value annuity if I say starting today. And you would know that it's a present value. It would not say starting today. So I could say, for example, I am going to, for the next 8 years, every week, I'm going to get a paycheck for $800. Now, if I discount those cash flows at, let's say, 4.09%, the present value of that payment structure that will go on for 8 years weekly is going to be $283,742. Now, why is that important? Say that you decide that you're going to work this job for 40 years. Let's say 35 years. What's the present value of that right now? $773,938. That's a good place to start for how much you in life insurance you should buy. Because that is the present value of the stream of cash flows through your working life, is that amount of money right there. So these have very practical implications in the world of finance and in your personal lives as well. So that's where that all comes from. The last one is a perpetuity. And I think I'm going to just hold that off because it's going to take me longer than I have left. So that's all I have for you for this day. Thank you.